WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. Anger and frustration that police waited to go into the classroom at Robb Elementary School while the shooter was inside carrying out his deadly attack that killed 19 fourth graders and two teachers. The head of the Texas Department of Public Safety now saying waiting was the wrong decision.
This all goes back to investigators saying the local incident commander at the time of the shooting thought there was no longer a threat to kids. They assumed the active shooter situation had changed into a barricaded man. But we now know authorities believe children were inside the school as the shooting was unfolding, calling 911. They were begging operators to please send police now. Texas DPS says while this was happening, 19 officers stood in the hallway trying to figure out a way to get inside the classroom where the shooter was barricaded. They say more than 45 minutes go by until Border Patrol agents show up with a master key to open up the classroom door where the suspect was then shot and killed.
Fox's Jeff Paul. Another decision causing anger. The NRA's won to hold its annual convention yesterday in Houston, days after the school massacre in Uvalde. Some blame Republicans for not enacting stricter gun control laws on mass shootings becoming more common in the U.S. Former President Donald Trump telling conference attendees yesterday he thinks it's something else.
Whatever our differences may be on other issues, what on earth is stopping Democrats from immediately passing measures to ramp up school security?
Mr. Trump calling for drastic security measures at schools across the country. Virginia's Lieutenant Governor Winsome Sears also speaking, media not allowed in to hear her. Nobody was injured, but a few homes in Olney were damaged in yesterday's storms. Montgomery County Fire spokesperson Pete Perringer says those homes on Tantara Way and Queen Elizabeth Drive.
All these homes were occupied. They did tell me that the residents did tell me that they got a tornado warning and they took appropriate action.
He says they then heard a crash and boom and saw trees down. No confirmation yet that the damage is from a tornado. Some new life breathed into an effort to remove the chair of the Prince George's County School Board. The State Board of Education's charging Dr. Juanita Miller with misconduct, neglect of duty, and incompetence. Six members of the Prince George's County School Board and some residents filed a formal request with the State Board last year, to get rid of her. The board dismissed that request because an affidavit wasn't filed, but the board voted this week to file charges. Former Prince George's County School Board member and current council member Ed Burrows tells 7 News.
Every day that she served as board chair and that she's serving as board chair has been a distraction from what's important.
Miller does have the option of filing an appeal. Starting today, a handful of Metro's Orange Line stations will be shut down for the summer.
It is the final phase of Metro's platform improvement project. As of today, 5 Orange Line stations will be closed through Labor Day. New Carrollton, Landover, Cheverly, Deanwood, and Minnesota Avenue stations all closed for the summer, with Metro promising shuttle bus service instead for riders. Orange Line trains will be operating between Vienna and Stadium Armory, and the New Carrollton Mark Rail and Amtrak service will not be impacted. Barbara Britt, WMAL and WMAL.com.
WMAL Sports. The Nats play a split doubleheader today after last night's game was canceled because of the storm. Traffic and weather next. Traffic and weather on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Here's LBD in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Prince George's County on the BW Parkway northbound in Greenbelt, traffic is slow between the Good Luck Road overpass and Greenbelt Road. On the DC Beltway inner loop and outer loop, lanes are clear. Virginia side of the Beltway, no delays on the inner loop and outer loop. In Virginia on 66, it's clear eastbound and westbound in Fairfax County. And on 95 in Virginia, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, set your cruise control. Lanes are wide open, northbound and southbound. And now for GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Today, partly cloudy, a chance for isolated showers, a high around 80. Tonight, mainly clear, with a low in the 50s or 60s. Right now, 64 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Now, on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. A happy Memorial Day weekend to you. John Gizzi joins us. He is the White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. John, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
The Tuesday primaries were overshadowed by the tragedy in Uvalde, Texas, and I want to talk to you a little bit about the NRA and their relationship with political candidates. But I do want to catch up on the Tuesday primaries because there were some significant developments, not only in Georgia, but also in Texas and Alabama. So give us the highlights of what happened politically on Tuesday.
Well, the big news is Georgia, of course, where three statewide incumbent office holders all won hotly contested Republican primaries against candidates whose common denominator was they were endorsed by Donald Trump. Governor Brian Kemp, Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, and State Attorney General Chris Carr all committed the apostasy of not opposing the certification of electors in the 2020 presidential election. In the end, Joe Biden narrowly carried the peach state. Donald Trump was unforgiving, and he backed their opponents. There were two factors that led to the not just renomination, but the big renomination of the tenacious trio. One, Governor Kemp and company, as incumbents, are better funded. And two, their challengers ran, sources tell me, almost exclusively on the 2020 election and what Trump calls the theft of the election. That just did not sell. And I spoke to former Republican Congressman John Linder, and he just said, whatever your opinion on it, elections are about the future, not the past. In addition, we saw famous names on the ballot. George P. Bush, nephew and grandson of presidents, went down for defeat in the race for state attorney general by 2-1. Incumbent Ken Paxton was renominated. And in Arkansas, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, former White House press secretary and daughter of former governor Mike Huckabee, overwhelmingly was nominated for her dad's old job. Sources in the Razorback state say she's a cinch to become its first ever female governor. And finally, there was Alabama. Senator Richard Shelby is retiring, and an interesting development. His handpicked successor and longtime top aide, Katie Britt, won 46% of the vote, almost meeting the threshold in Alabama of 50% plus one for nomination. But it was a three-way race, and Britt will face Congressman Mo Brooks, who came in second. You recall he was endorsed by President Trump and then said, let's get the 2020 election behind him, and was then unendorsed by the former president. Now we will see if President Trump changes his mind once again and backs Brooke in the runoff, which will be held June 21st. I might add, Alabama has a history and has already had two female senators appointed to the job. Katie Britt would be the first elected.
As I'm sure everyone has seen by now, Beto O'Rourke, the Texas gubernatorial candidate, interrupted the press conference that Governor Abbott and local officials were holding in the wake of the shooting in Uvalde, Texas, at that elementary school. And the debate arises again about gun control, about AR-15s. And my question, John, is, the NRA has donated millions of dollars over the years to political candidates. Is anything going to change at this point in terms of that relationship?
No, it won't. Because, as the saying goes, I've seen this movie before. Every time there is a tragedy, the first thing that one reads, and I recall presidents taking to the podium at the White House, House members and senators going to the floors of their respective chambers, all call for new gun control legislation. Whether it was the tragedy in Newtown, Connecticut, the shooting in Florida at the gay nightclub, and the tragedy in Uvalde, one hears the cry for new national gun control legislation, and yet it never rises to the surface for even a vote. Now, one can debate whether that's good or bad. That is the fact. It is also a fact that in this poll, Republicans right now are favored to take Senate and win. There's five seats they need to run the House of Representatives. The NRA will provide a lot of money, its own problems notwithstanding, and its internal dissension, which is growing very turbulent, notwithstanding. My guess is that the NRA has no place to go because so many Democrats have embraced the cause of gun control. So many Republicans say they're the champions of the Second Amendment. Nothing will change.
President Biden signed an executive order on police reform on Wednesday. What were the highlights?
Well, again, police reform is another topic that comes up all the time. And what he forgets and what others forget, this is a state and local issue. The United States has never had a national police force. And indeed, leaders in the FBI and CIA over the years rejected the idea because it runs contrary to the 10th Amendment and to the rules of policing in general. You can say that some police departments, particularly in big cities, need reform, need review. But this will be done by state and local officials, by initiative and referendum, not by the stroke of a pen at the White House.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. Have a wonderful Memorial Day weekend, John.
Happy Memorial Day. And let's all stop and think for a moment about those we are honoring this day, the men and women who served our country in uniform. Take care.
Thank you, John. It's 7:16. It's the Saturday morning update. And coming up next, we're going to talk about the Library of Congress Veterans History Project and a very interesting podcast that you can catch. Also on the way, we've got Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and KT McFarland, of course. But right now, Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
It's good morning on the Beltway, both in Maryland and in Virginia. No delays on the inner loop or on the outer loop. If you have cruise control, go ahead and set it. Now in Virginia on 66, no crashes or construction eastbound or westbound. Staying in Virginia, on 95 between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, lanes are at speed on the northbound side and on the southbound side. And in Montgomery County on 270, you shouldn't be tapping your brakes. I have no reports of any delays northbound or southbound between the Beltway and Frederick. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly cloudy and mild on this Saturday, a lot quieter, high temperatures around 80 degrees, only a chance for a few isolated showers. Now later on tonight, back in the 50s and 60s, mainly clear, mostly sunny on your Sunday, temperatures in the mid-80s for Memorial Day Monday, hot, high temperatures back near 90 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
62 degrees in the nation's capital, 717 on the Saturday morning update.
Monday, as you're prepping for your Memorial Day barbecue, will be live 5 to 9 a.m. on O'Connor & Company, WMAL.
It's the Saturday morning update for Memorial Day weekend. I'm Rick Fowler, and while many people are doing a lot of vacationing and barbecues and having a great time, we always like to take a moment to acknowledge the real reason for Memorial Day weekend, and of course, that is to honor and mourn the U.S. military personnel who have died while serving in the United States Armed Forces. Memorial Day was originally known as Decoration Day. It was first observed in 1868 on May 30th. And if you've been with us before on Memorial Day weekend, you've heard us talk about the Library of Congress Veterans History Project. Well, an interesting twist this weekend. We're joined by Tony Lupo. He is the host of the Warrior Next Door podcast. He is a citizen historian, and the podcast that he does with his colleague actually features interviews with veterans around the country in conjunction with the Veterans History Project. Great to have you with us, and tell us first off about the Library of Congress Veterans History Project.
Absolutely. So it was started in the early 2000s. It was an act of Congress that would set aside a certain portion of the Library of Congress and what they called the American Folklife Center. And it was kind of an homage to the late Stephen Ambrose of Band of Brothers fame. And the idea being that Stephen Ambrose was able to take oral histories from interviews he conducted to be able to recast or retell stories like Band of Brothers or Citizen Soldiers or Pegasus Bridge or any number of his books in a way that was really compelling. So the idea was you don't need to be a historian to collect these stories and have them archived. So it empowered your citizen historians, your amateur historians like myself and my partner Ryan Fairfield in this podcast that we have called the Warrior Next Door podcast. It empowered us to be able to not only meet with these veterans but be able to tell them, look, everything you share with us is going to be archived in posterity at the Library of Congress, which was something that really was important to a number of the vets that we interviewed.
Well, what is your 9-to-5 job?
So my 9-to-5 job is I'm a geophysicist. I work in the energy sector out of Denver, Colorado. And that's the so I'm a scientist by training. But my passion, the thing that I really enjoy doing, is listening to older people tell me stories about things that happened before I was born. And that's why I love oral history so much.
So you volunteer your time and you actually go out and speak with veterans and record their histories.
That is correct. So we have, and again, the co-founder of the Warrior Next Door podcast is Ryan Fairfield. He and I worked together in the energy sector in Houston when we started collecting these interviews as volunteers for the Library of Congress. And once we started interviewing an individual, that individual would say, hey, you should talk to this individual, and so forth and so on. And next thing you know, it's 15 years later, we have over 200 interviews that we've submitted to the Library of Congress and growing. But we weren't satisfied with that. Rick, what we wanted to do beyond recording and making these available for posterity for future researchers or for the families is we wanted to share these more widely. So what we do is we take and we feature a veteran and we pull out select clips of things that we think are pretty interesting and we want to share. And then we add our own commentary. We put things into context. We say, hey, you know, when so-and-so joined in March of 1942, this is what was going on in the war at the time. And when so-and-so talks about the proximity fuse and how important it was in World War II, we will take a digression and we will talk about the proximity fuse and other elements of that time period that they take for granted that everyone knows because they live through it, but the modern listener might need to understand a little better. So we think that by doing that, we do it in a conversational way. We hope it's educationally and hopefully entertaining as well.
So you started this 15 years ago. That's a long time before podcasting. How has this affected you? I mean, to have this passion for 15 years.
It's been a real wild ride. I mean, initially, all we wanted to do, especially my grandfather, when he passed away, he was a World War II vet in the Navy, served on USS Colorado. A lot of the family members didn't really listen to Grandpa's stories, but I did, his grandson, and I kind of felt like I wish I had recorded those for posterity. And so the idea was, you know, can we do this for other people? Can we get other people to share their stories so we can record it so that the families can have it as well as the Library of Congress? And over time, what we started to realize was that the Library of Congress is phenomenal, but not everyone goes to that media, that website, to listen to these stories. We wanted to reach a wider audience. We want to share this with as many people as possible. So when the podcast started to become a thing, you know, 6, 8, 10 years ago, we started thinking, hey, maybe this will translate to a podcast well. So not quite a year ago, we launched The Warrior Next Door. We've got over 50 episodes available right now. It is growing very fast, and the podcast has really revivified Ryan and I's passion for not only his oral histories, but now we have a new way to share them that's really exciting for us.
In your interactions with the family members and the veterans themselves, what's one of the most sort of memorable experiences for you?
I think the one that sticks out is we interviewed someone named Mooney Stahl, who was a Marine in the Pacific. And about 3 or 4 months later, I got a phone call from his wife, and she was distraught because he had just passed away. And she knew that we had recorded an interview, but she couldn't find it, and she wanted us to resend her a copy of it, a video audio tape copy of it, and we did. And about a week later, she called me up crying, and she said that they played it on a loop at his wake, and everyone stood around it crying because they felt like he was there with them. And to me, if that's the only thing that we were able to do with the over 200 interviews we conducted to touch someone's lives, to have that documentation as part of their family legacy, then it makes all the sacrifices that we've made as volunteers worth it.
Well, we can tell from the passion that you bring to it how much it means to you, and obviously how much it means to the veterans and to their families. Now, if you will give us two website addresses, number one, the address to get to your podcast, and then we'll get the Library of Congress Veterans History Project site.
Absolutely. So we have a Facebook page, and if you just type in the Warrior Next Door podcast, you'll go to it. It's the only one, and it has access to all of our podcasts and other materials that we provide for it. Or you can go to any podcast hosting site like Apple, Spotify, you name it. Type in the Warrior Next Door. It'll pop up. I hope that you guys enjoy it. We also accept feedback on our Facebook site for anything that we may have gotten wrong or is controversial. And the Library of Congress, if you were to do a keyword search on the Veterans History Project, it's the first thing that popped up. I think it's veteranshistoryproject.loc.gov. But those are the places that you could go to listen to the unedited, uncut oral histories, or if you go to our podcast, you'll hear clips from the interviews we've conducted with these men and women with some editorial comments and hopefully something that can be educational and entertaining at the same time.
So if somebody's driving this morning en route to the beach, the two keywords to remember, the Warrior Next Door for the podcast and the Library of Congress Veterans History Project. Tony Lupo, thank you so very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Rick. And if you listen to our podcast, you're going to get a little mud on your boots. And, Rick, I just really appreciate and we're grateful for you having us on your program.
It is our pleasure. 7:26, the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Coming up in the next half hour, we've got KT McFarland, of course, and Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. So stick around with us.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. Police admitting they made mistakes in their response to the massacre at Robb Elementary School that left 19 fourth graders and two teachers dead.
The most glaring is that Texas DPS says that while the clock was ticking and 45 minutes went by, with many officers standing in the hallway, there were kids inside that classroom with the shooter who could and might have been able to be helped. Now, this all goes back to investigators saying the local incident commander at the time of the shooting thought there was no longer a threat to kids. They assumed the active shooter situation had changed into a barricaded man. But we now know authorities believe children were inside the school as the shooting was unfolding, calling 911.
Fox's Jeff Paul. That shooting rampage renewing the push by some for stricter gun control laws. Former President Donald Trump reacting to those calls while speaking yesterday at the NRA's convention in Texas.
As always, in the wake of these tragedies, the various gun control policies being pushed by the left would have done nothing to prevent the horror that took place. Absolutely nothing.
The decision to hold the conference days after the shooting angering some, protests were held outside. Some residents in Olney forced to take cover yesterday after a tornado warning was issued for them during the storm. Montgomery County Fire spokesperson Pete Perringer.
Next thing you know, they heard a crash, a boom, and several trees were down here.
The damaged homes are on Tantara Way and Queen Elizabeth Drive. Nobody was injured and no word yet on whether that damage was caused by a tornado. WMAL Sports, the Nats play a split doubleheader today after last night's game was canceled because of the storm. Traffic and weather next. Traffic and weather on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Here's Albie D in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
Starting with the Maryland side of the Beltway, from Prince George's County to Montgomery County, bridge to bridge, lanes are clear on the inner loop and on the outer loop. In Montgomery County on 270, no reports of any slowdowns between the Beltway and Fredericksburg. In Prince George's County, between the two Beltways on the BW Parkway and 95, you're at the posted speed limit there. Virginia side of the Beltway, inner loop and outer loop are clear. 66 in Fairfax County is clear. And if you're on 95 in Virginia, you're not tapping the brakes between the Beltway and Fredericksburg. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Today, partly cloudy, a chance for isolated showers, a high around 80. Right now, 64 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Memorial Day weekend on the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us. He is the president of the London Center for Policy Research, and he is the author of Operation Dark Heart, former U.S. Army. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, thank you for your service, and good morning, sir.
Thank you, Rick, and it's always great to join you, and thanks for always allowing me to use my experience to try to educate your audience, so thank you.
Well, we appreciate the perspectives, Tony, and obviously the horrific shooting, Robb Elementary School on Tuesday, Uvalde, Texas, and there are so many levels of failure in this. The school door was propped open, apparently by a teacher. The armed security guard apparently was not at the school at the time. Once the shooter was in, there was a decision made to treat it as a barricade situation, not an active shooter. So there was a long delay in taking down the shooter. And then conflicting accounts from those who were on the scene, leading the Texas governor, Greg Abbott, to say that he's livid. So walk us through what happened here, Tony, the failures.
Well, it all comes down to leadership at each level. One of the things notable, as you point out, all these things that fail should have at least at some point been exercised. And I know that the people I advise, and, you know, I advise Sheriff Dave Decatur down at Stafford as his Homeland Security Advisor, is obviously you have to essentially maintain not only current training, but current exercise of that training. And you just mentioned that each level, each by itself, fail. Something was wrong at each level, and each made the next level of failure worse. And the idea that this gunman, even though they were having 911 calls during this 48 minutes he was left in the school, and look, in a situation like this, 48 minutes is forever. I've been in situations like this, and let me tell you those minutes when you're just sitting there waiting and you know something's going on, that's just hard to take. So it's very clear that local law enforcement was not prepared for it. And then when from all accounts, and again, this is the second thing we have to look at, is the whole messaging issue of how much do we believe of what we've been told since the story's changed at least twice. According to what reports I consider credible, CBP officers, federal officers, finally said, we're going in. And that, again, had to go against the guidance of the local police chief. And obviously there was a jurisdictional issue, but the guys did the right thing. And especially in light of, Rick, the fact that children were calling in real time saying, hey, come in and get us, indicating to me that there was sufficient information indicating that the guy was still active. He didn't want to talk. He was still in there shooting people. So at every level, each failure led to the next level of failure, which led to the next. And it's something that clearly has nothing to do about the gun. It has to do about a crazy guy who met a situation with people who were not prepared to respond to it. And that's the tragedy of the whole thing.
I'll talk a little bit about mental health, Tony. You know, this is one that we missed. Nobody seemed to have him on the radar screen. We talked with Jim Trusty a little bit about that earlier, and the fact that juveniles, often their records are sealed, so even if they had a run-in with law enforcement, it may not be in the database for a background check because juvenile records are sealed. So you've got that complexity here. So tell us a little more, how do you deal with this?
There's always indicators that something's up. Even down here where I live in North Carolina now, there are issues at the school all the time. And I know for a fact that law enforcement have been called several times to tend to things. And so, while I don't think you can necessarily get ahead of everything, and these records are sealed, people kind of know what's going on. I mean, the community, if they're paying attention, knows what student is where relating to attitude. And in this situation here, it seems to me that everywhere you're going to have troubled youth, no doubt. It's a very difficult time for children in general. You add other stressors into the situation, all the different things going on in society. It's a very difficult thing for a lot of kids to go through. But there's a difference between being troubled and being essentially someone who's planning to do harm. This individual seemed to have really kind of been on that edge a lot. But the moment he purchased weapons, and I don't know how even at 18 you purchase $2,000 plus, almost $4,000 worth of weapons and not have somebody say, hey, there's something going on here. What are you going to do with this? It seems to me that you really have to have parents who are engaged with their children as best you can so that, you know these sorts of things. And there's no one solution, but the solution is to essentially have communities which do pay attention to this and do exercise together. And again, like I said, here locally, I know the local sheriff takes things very seriously. They respond to a lot of different things, and they've had a number of lockdowns based on just simple threats of something about to happen. So I think the response has to be comprehensive at the individual level as well as the organizational level to do this. And then, obviously, to get back off the mental health issue for a second, teachers themselves have to be, they're their best defense. They've got to pay attention to what's going on. They see these students every day. And in the end, they have to be armed as well, just in case there's a worst-case scenario like we just saw.
And, you know, the mental health issue, obviously, is a problem. And I wanted to talk to you about the role of social media. Now, I mentioned this earlier in the show. Yeah. I said, if I go online and I look at something at Home Depot, I will be followed for days with ads popping up on Facebook for whatever it was I was looking for on Home Depot. So there's an algorithm that says my computer is looking for hedge trimmers. Why do we have a situation where these kids are posting online, there are warnings that they're going to shoot, they say these things, and nobody seems to pick that up, but they know I'm looking for hedge trimmers?
So Facebook a few years ago actually bragged and said they have algorithms which can do this. And it's what's strange is they never seem to work. So it's like, really? You say this, but you don't do it? And to the other point, yeah, it's like I can, you know, simply click on a pencil, and next thing you know, I've got 5,000 people trying to sell me, you know, number two pencils. So it's something that needs to be looked at from the federal level at some point. It's like, what's going on with all these big tech algorithms? Why do they exist? And we could have a whole interview on this, you and I. I mean, we should probably break this down for people someday about what's going on regarding the social media thing. With that said, I know a number of local departments, sheriff departments and police departments have gone to and started monitoring as best they can social media. The feds have a hard time because of intelligence collection and other restrictions, but local law enforcement, Rick, do have the capacity to do this. And I know the ones I work with do it, you know, very, very quietly, but very effectively. They do not wish to be intrusive, but clearly if you have students, kids contemplating violence and making, not only contemplating it, but actually indicating they're going to take the next steps and act on it, that's what needs to be detected. And again, there's no one solution, but the solution is you have to start looking at that social media for indicators.
Got about 2 minutes left, Tony. I want to turn to Ukraine. There are reports that Ukraine is pleading with the United States for more weapons. As, you know, this has been overshadowed, obviously, by the events in Texas this week, where are we in the Ukraine-Russia conflict?
So, at this point, the Russians are nibbling away effectively in the south, in the east. And what we're seeing, and I just reread my team's report from yesterday again this morning, the Russians are making gains. They've made some slow but some very effective gains in the south. And then in the north near Kiev, the Russians have been able to stop and start walking back the Ukrainian counteroffensive. So the reason you're seeing this cry for more weapons is because, the Ukrainians are going to start slowing down. As a matter of fact, while Ukraine's not going to announce this, they've started having some leadership breakdowns of some of their units. They've had units in the territories basically refusing to take orders. So not all is rosy with the Ukrainian counteroffensive. And I'm not saying this because I'm not taking either side. I'm not for or against either side at this point. Just let me be clear. I'm trying to be clear on what's going on. So at this point, our best assessment is that the Russians essentially have, I don't want to say unlimited resources, but they have significant resources that are available to continue to pour into this. Ukraine does not. So I think it's literally a war of attrition at this point. And what Zelensky is trying to do is trying to re-rally folks outside to help him. The honest answer is, Rick, unless some third party, some third force interdicts on behalf of Ukraine, it's just inevitable that Russia is going to essentially walk around and carve out the terrain they want in the east and the south to essentially take the control of the coast along the Black Sea over to Crimea. And they're going to isolate the rest of Ukraine from that water, the body of water, and slowly strangle it. I think that's the plan at this point. And the Russians are doing it little by little. And they've learned a lot from the early days of the war, and they're actually being much more effective.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, he's the host of the Thought to Action podcast. You'll find that at londoncenter.org. Tony, have a great weekend, and thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Rick.
You betcha. 746, Al BD's in the WMAL Traffic Center. Then KT McFarland joins us.
In Virginia on the Beltway, looked at the traffic cameras, inner loop and outer loop, no crashes or construction. In Fairfax County on 66, you're not tapping the brakes eastbound or westbound. There's no crashes or construction there as well. Now on to 95 in Virginia. Northbound and southbound between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, lanes are clear. Maryland side of the Beltway, Prince George's County and in Montgomery County, lanes are open. In Montgomery County on 270 between the Beltway and Frederick, you're not tapping the brakes northbound or southbound. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly cloudy and mild on this Saturday, a lot quieter. High temperatures around 80 degrees. Only a chance for a few isolated showers. Now later on tonight, back in the 50s and 60s, mainly clear. Mostly sunny on your Sunday. Temperatures in the mid-80s for Memorial Day Monday. Hot. High temperatures back near 90 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
63 degrees, 747 in the nation's capital on WMAL. 7:50, it's the Saturday morning update on WMAL Memorial Day weekend. We are joined by KT McFarland, President Trump's Deputy National Security Advisor, a board member of the American Conservative Union, and author of the best-selling book, Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
You know, I spend a lot of time during the week following a lot of mainstream media, and you get a perception of America and Americans and their attitudes. If you, you know, spend 5 minutes watching The View, which I hope that's the maximum anybody would spend watching that show if they did at all. But when you watch the shows that actually influence Americans across the country, you start to wonder, what are they really thinking across America? And you've had the opportunity to travel quite a bit recently. And what are your perceptions of how people are feeling? What are they thinking?
Well, they're certainly not watching television, or at least they're not watching the news. Look, I've spent the last couple of weeks traveling all around the country. I've gone to family weddings and graduations. I've been to Idaho, Colorado, Texas, Florida, North Carolina, and I've been around people who themselves are coming from even more places than the ones I've just mentioned. And a lot of them are non-political. They're from all socioeconomic groups, people who vote Democrat, Republican, many we would label independents or libertarians, although they don't even think in those terms. I was with farmers and ranchers and tech workers and white-collar and blue-collar and no-collar workers. There is massive anger out there, massive, and it's directed against everyone and everything in Washington, and especially the people in charge of government. So the Democrats are taking the brunt of it. It's the shortages of everything from baby formula to fertilizer. It's the farmers in the economy. Well, they're reminded of inflation of every time they try to go buy fertilizer, which is no longer readily available in the stores. Everybody in the country is reminded of inflation every time they fill up the tanks, go to McDonald's, go through the grocery store checkout. Even Costco has become too expensive for most people. Forget those official inflation numbers. Most people are seeing the prices of the stuff they've got to buy double, and it's happened suddenly and inexplicably. And Washington doesn't seem to care, nor does corporate media. corporate America, nor does the media. They're more concerned with wokeism and the culture wars and pronouns than they are on putting food on the table. And it's their indifference to the plight of the average American and the arrogance that they know better than you guys do. So just shut up and pay your taxes and do what we say. It's a boiling anger against elites. And that includes especially Washington bureaucrats and politicians. But it's not limited to that. It's anger against the media, the corporate America. Not only do the elites give the perception that they're smarter than the rest of us and therefore entitled to rule over all aspects of our lives, but they've been wrong about just about everything for years. The forever wars, the culture wars, the taxes, the economy, education, COVID, you name it. They don't even get it right. And so I think people have stopped listening to legacy media because they don't trust them. And anyway, the first thing you cut is your cable cord and your subscriptions are too expensive. They're getting their news from their own lives and from their neighbors. They don't talk to pollsters. So I don't think Washington has any idea of the anger that's coming their way. It's much more than it was in 2016 when Donald Trump was elected. You know, I remember when I moved from Washington 35 years ago and moved to New York and tried to explain to my new friends the difference between Washington and the rest of the country. Washington never has a recession. People never lose their jobs. Government workers can't be fired. They don't feel inflation because they don't have cost of living increases. They don't drive. They take subsidized, really nice mass transit. They're eating, you know, lunch at the subsidized government cafeterias. They're immune to the problems and the laws they've taken to the rest of the country. I think there's a bloodbath coming in November, and nobody has any idea of the massive extent of it.
So, KT, the political parties have focus groups. They have boots on the ground in 50 states. They have their state committee. They have state senators, state representatives. The senators and congressmen go home every weekend. How are they so blind? It boggles my mind that these people don't get it.
Well, maybe they have their focus groups, but, you know, who's got time to go to those things? Who's got time to go to the town meetings? These people are now taking on extra work to make ends meet. I don't understand how they don't get it, but they don't live in the real world. They live in their little bubble. They talk to each other. And I'm talking about Republicans and Democrats. I don't think Mitch McConnell gets it even as much, you know, any more than the people in the West Wing of the White House get it. And it's also the crime. It's the crime that's now become endemic. I mean, you go to any, you know, drugstore, maybe not in Washington, but you go to any drugstore anywhere in the country, there's nothing on the shelves. It's because particularly in the blue states and in the blue cities, it's because there's no law enforcement for any kind of shoplifting. You go to drugstores on the Upper East Side of Manhattan, there's nothing on the shelves. It's because it's all been stolen and because anybody can walk in anytime, take whatever they want and leave. But it's also, it's really the arrogance and the fact that nobody seems to identify that there's a problem or nobody seems to care, even if the focus groups tell them a problem, because they're far more concerned with the culture wars and the wokeism. Most people in the country could care less. I think it's really interesting that when, I think it was McDonald's this last week, had an annual meeting to elect board members, and Carl Icahn had proposed two board members who were very concerned with ethical treatment of pigs in making of McDonald's food. And the two board members that he proposed, you know what their vote count was? 1%. Nobody in the country cares about this stuff. They've got to put meat on the table. They've got to get their kids to school. And to watch how the politicians postured over this latest tragedy in Texas, instead of admitting that there are real problems, there's mental illness that nobody's believed. There are no policing, and people have guns who shouldn't be allowed to have guns in urban areas. It's so obvious to the rest of the country, but Washington, of course, uses this to yet another opportunity to bash each other over the head.
Well, KT, I hope that your message resonates here in Washington. KT McFarland, President Trump's Deputy National Security Advisor and the author of the bestseller, Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, thank you so much.
Thank you, Rick.
That's it for the Saturday morning update. We wish you a very pleasant Memorial Day weekend. And since it is Memorial Day, please take a moment to reflect on those in service who gave their lives the real meaning of Memorial Day weekend.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.